Generosity is the seat of all the other virtues, says the American Buddhist writer Sharon Salzberg. Letting go and giving is the source of happiness, she says. If generosity is the source of happiness, why is it so complicated? I see complicated and conflicting feelings about generosity in many people, including in myself. One feeling is guilt. This comes up often when we think about monetary giving. We might think, I know I should give, or I did give, but I could have given more, so I don't feel good about my giving. Sometimes we dismiss the importance of our generosity as if our giving doesn't matter. We think, you know, the people I've helped are still in difficulty. I don't have enough to share to solve the problems of the world. What difference does my giving make? Such guilty feelings, such doubts about ourselves, mean we are giving without letting go. Another complicated feeling is resentment. In our heads, it may go like this. I'm giving generously, but too many others are failing to do their share. I'm giving my money, my time, my skills. Why don't they? Sometimes we dismiss the recipients of our support. I try to help, but they just waste my money. I took time to listen, but they didn't want my advice. Such discomfort means we are giving without letting go. Giving with no strings attached. You've heard that phrase. The idea of no strings attached is worthwhile when we think about those to whom we give, but there's something even more important. The strings we attached are also hooked into us, pulling on our spirits as much as on the recipients, if not more. When strings are attached, it means that neither the recipient nor the giver is free. The more we hold on, the more cramped our spirits feel. But Sharon Salzberg writes that when we let go, our world opens up. The Buddha is quoted as saying, if you knew, as I do, the power of giving, you would not let a single meal pass without sharing some of it. That's what Salzberg means by giving as a source of happiness. Look at all of our daily interactions, at work or at home, in our neighborhood, in traffic or on the train, talking, listening, shopping or vacationing, voting or sweeping the sidewalk. Every activity reflects both giving and receiving. So where's the happiness come from? I learn from others about the power of letting go in generosity and finding happiness. And I'm finding new ways to look at generosity, and I'm trying them out. And for now, I have three words about it, and they all start with H. The first word is habit. Ease and generosity come with practice, with building habits. To imagine that anybody is totally generous all the time, never holding back, never uneasy about giving, to imagine this is a mistake. At the same time, it is wrong for anyone to think, oh, I'm hopeless. I'm bound by clinging and holding on all the time. I'll never be as generous as I'd like to be. Thinking this way ignores a crucial factor. We cannot forget about practice. This is how traditions and cultures shape us. They help us grow and help us excel by practice, by habits. The Reverend Vale Weller, who serves our national denomination in fundraising, offered our congregation a sermon 2 years ago. She said the practice of generosity is like learning to ride a bicycle. We don't learn to ride merely by imagining what it would be like. We learn to ride by doing it. Likewise, we learn to give by doing it. We teach and inspire our children and friends to act generously by doing so ourselves. This isn't only about monetary generosity, for sure. For example, in generosity, we also give hospitality, food, and words of appreciation. Showing up is a form of generosity. Salzburg says, we give time, service, caring. Even to accept someone to be just the way they are is a kind of giving. Or someone rushes ahead of you in traffic for a parking space. Can you give it up, let go, and be happy? If you can, she says, you understand generosity. Well, sometimes I can, sometimes I am able to let it go when another driver makes an insensitive move on the road, but sometimes I want to call them out with a blast of my horn, or at least I'll scowl at them with a punishing face. Fortunately, she says, our moments of weakness can give rise to another habit. We can watch ourselves when we don't want to let go, or don't want to give, or yield, or wait for another. We can watch ourselves. We can notice resistance in ourselves and examine it. She says, you can enhance the practice of generosity by observing those moments when the thought of giving does arise and you resist it. This approach guarantees that many of us will have many moments to practice. When you are in such a moment, she advises, feel the nature of the resistance. Do you experience it as contraction, rigidity, fear? Explore it. The most important habit, the best practice for generosity, may take the most effort. And that habit is to recognize generosity in ourselves and celebrate it. As Salzburg says, because of our conditioned shame and our self-doubting in our culture, we are shy to claim our generous moments. We need help in recognizing our generosity. Together, we can celebrate one another's self-giving moments. Last year, a few dozen leaders, clergy and lay leaders, of the larger UU congregations in our district, including this one, we attended a workshop with Vale Weller from the UUA. She invited us into reflection on several questions. This was the first one. Think of a monetary gift that you have made sometime that was meaningful and satisfying for you. She gave no guidelines or limits on the kind of gift. It was a personal question, and each could answer in our own way. So we split into twos and threes with people we didn't know or didn't know very well, and we took some time to think. Then each person listened to the other describe a gift that we had made and felt proud of. In the space of that brief interaction, I got to know a wonderful Unitarian Universalist woman from another congregation. I told her about a donation I had sent to an inner city high school I read about in a newspaper when I was 22 and in college. I felt heard by her and appreciated. She talked about a scholarship fund that she had established when she retired. I was inspired by her story. We didn't let shame intrude on claiming our generosity. We didn't second guess ourselves, nor did we boast. We merely spoke of something we had given, which had given us joy and satisfaction. Noticing how we have been generous is a practice any of us can do every day, or once a week, or at the start of a new month. I invite you to give yourself that time. Think about how you have been generous recently. It doesn't have to be writing a big check or saving a kitten caught in a tree, but it could be. Just reflect on what you did and how it felt, and just let yourself experience the joy at your giving. You can do this with friends on the phone or online, with chosen family around a dinner table. You can ask this question of others here at coffee hour or go out for coffee sometime. You can exchange your answers to this question. However, and whenever you can, think about how you have been generous, describe what you did, and let yourself experience joy. This is a good habit, and H stands for habit. Another H word is hope. Generosity is a form of hope in the future, in the importance of our giving, and in other people. In December, late December, I preached at the First Unitarian Church in San Jose, giving a sermon to them entitled Money and Real Life, a version of a sermon I had preached for our congregation 3 years ago. Next Sunday, I will deliver it again. Not to you, but you're welcome to attend. I will be preaching it for our hosts, our landlord congregation, here at Sierra Arden at their 9 o'clock service. How's that for recycling? Anyway, at that service in San Jose, their lay worship leader spoke about his view of generosity as hope. As hope. He's been a member of that church for many years and is bringing up his kids there. His little boy lit the chalice that morning. The man said that every year when he gets ready to make a big pledge to the church or to write that big check for a donation, he freezes for a bit. What if I end up not having the money to pay it? What if something happens? He told us that after pausing and noticing the sensation of holding back, he told himself, well, I made a pledge last year and it worked out fine. And the year before that, and so on. He said that making a generous donation or pledging to make one is an act of hope. Letting go is an act of hope over fear. The choice of ease over anxiety. He was talking about his own thought process, but he could have gone on to relate his hope to the life of that congregation. When Reverend Lucy and I lead a newcomer's orientation to membership class, we explain that every UU congregation is independent, autonomous, and self-sustaining. All of the money to support our programs and our mission comes from us, from one another, and is given voluntarily. We put our hope in one another to come through with support. It's kind of scary when you think about it, that the bills UUSS pays and the compensation of our staff and ministers all depend on our trust in all of us, in a wide variety of people, to pledge and to give to make it all happen. But as our San Jose Unitarian Universalist friend said to his congregation, it happened last year and the year before that, it worked out fine. When we do this together, our trust grows in one another. We can trust others to join us in the joy of giving, the ease of sharing, the happiness of letting go. As we do, hope grows among us. Then we can enjoy the fruits of our generosity and the fruits of the generosity of the people sitting around us. All of this is worth celebrating. And remember, celebrating is a good habit. We can celebrate the hope our generosity embodies. There's another H word, the third one. And this word is harvest. What I mean by harvest is not organ donation, though that is a good thing. I mean that acting with generosity is a response to the abundance of life, a response to the blessings we've gathered as we go through life. We count our blessings and give thanks. We praise the harvest of all the benefits of existence. When we recognize all that we have and all that we receive, we can experience gratitude. It's been said that gratitude and generosity are two sides of the same coin. Gratitude leads to generosity and to joy and kindness, and they lead back to gratitude. When we share these virtues, they reinforce one another. John Wesley, the founder of the Methodist movement, said this: "True religion is, in two words, gratitude and benevolence. Gratitude to our Creator and Supreme Benefactor, and benevolence to our fellow creatures." All religions encourage giving thanks, but even secular expressions of gratitude can make a difference in our lives. One of our longtime members told me recently, "My spouse and I have never been much for prayer. We focus on gratitude." I said, "Perhaps that is a form of prayer." The practice of expressing our gratitude is getting lots of attention these days in the published work of psychologists and poets, in lectures by neurologists, and in the lessons of spiritual teachers. Gratitude is good for body and soul. A simple gratitude habit or harvest practice is making a list of things for which you can give thanks. It could be done every day or once a week. Making a gratitude list can shift your frame of mind. It can even lift your mood. I did it on Friday morning, and it helped me. Whatever I had been burdened by earlier in the week, whatever was giving me a bad mood, it lost its hold on my mood on Friday. I'm sure getting a good night's sleep didn't hurt, and my morning coffee gave me a boost, but I know being thankful made a difference. And of course, in my harvest of gratitude, I made sure to mention that good night's rest and that fresh cup of coffee. At my home, when I can take time in the morning for meditation and prayer, I give thanks for the new day. I call a few things to mind. My harvest of gratitude includes the people I will encounter in our congregation that day, and the people on our staff I'll see when I get to the office. Many a morning, the first people I will see are the staff at the front desk of the YMCA when I go in to exercise. Anticipating their words of welcome and their service so early in the morning, I give thanks for them. I look forward to seeing other people I know there and to a greeting. I give thanks for people who greet me by name. When I sit on my prayer cushion in the morning, I call to mind people from here who are dealing with a health crisis, severe pain, grief over a loss, or some other challenge. And there have been a lot of them in our community. When I send them healing thoughts, I give thanks for each one of them. I give thanks for the new babies here among us as well. When I'm sitting there, I think about my family too, my relatives. I don't have a generous attitude about some of my relatives, but I try to call them to mind with kindness, and sometimes I succeed. Yet regardless of my hurts or grudges, I am who I am in large part because of my family, so I must, when I make a harvest of gratitude, give them some of the credit. One of my dearest friends has a rare form of cancer. Recently, it exploded into an extensive and painful attack on his body. And when he was doing simple yard work, he broke a leg where the cancer had weakened his bones. So he's been laid up and having a lot of pain while receiving chemotherapy. I don't want to lose him. Nobody wants to lose him. So I pray for him too. I want his pain to subside, and I want him to survive. I give thanks for him. He is one of the most caring, kind, and forgiving people I know. He's cheerful, attentive, hardworking. He's generous to his church, charitable organizations, family, and friends. He cooks dinner and brings motley groups of people together around the table, friends who wouldn't know each other except through him. Usually out at a restaurant, he insists on picking up the check, and he has a habit of leaving a generous tip. Though he's not a Buddhist, he is an example of what the Buddha said. If you knew, as I do, the power of giving, you would not let a single meal pass without sharing some of it. He is full of joy. Last week I saw him for a short visit. Always curious and interested, he asked me about this Sunday's upcoming sermon topic. Generosity, I said. He replied, "I'm a good example for that." "I know you are," I began. And he said, "No, I mean all the help I'm getting from people. How good my friends are to me." I said, "Everyone's just giving you some of what we receive from you." His harvest of gratitude, his gratitude list, is a reflection of his own generous way of life. He is grateful, and he finds it easy to let go in generosity. Generosity itself is a gift. It is the foundation, the seat of the other virtues. It can be the source of happiness. There are many ways to invite the spirit of gratitude. Three of them are habit, hope, and harvest. We practice generosity by noticing, by sharing, and by celebrating. We practice giving to kindle our trust in others and our hope in the future. We practice naming the harvest of blessings, large ones and small ones, so we can give thanks. May we always find blessings in our lives. May we trust that our lives also can be a blessing to others. So may it be. Blessed be, and amen.